Good afternoon, Your Honors. Just a clarification. My name is Kevin Hayburn, but I am here representing the Texas Department of Insurance Division of Workers' Compensation. We intervened in this case. I'll be taking the first 8 minutes. Mr. Josie, representing Liberty Mutual, will follow with 7 minutes and also provide the rebuttal. May it please the court. The Division of Workers' Comp has participated in this case as an intervener, both at the trial court level and at now the appellate court level, because we believe this case is about exclusive jurisdiction. It's about the exclusive jurisdiction of the Division of Workers' Comp, of Workers' Compensation, to resolve workers' compensation benefits disputes. This is such a case. This case is about the exclusive jurisdiction of DWIC to resolve a case involving lifetime income benefits. In this case, Liberty Mutual requested and was given a contested case hearing at the division. Liberty Mutual asked the division to decide whether the injured worker, Ricky Adcock, was entitled to LIBS as of July 20th, 2009, the date of the hearing in 2009. Mr. Adcock had previously been determined eligible for LIBS at a separate CCH in May of 1997. The division hearing officer found that Mr. Adcock remained entitled to LIBS on that July 20th, 2009 hearing date. And the hearing officer's decision was affirmed by the division's appeals panel, a second group of administrative law judges that reviews a case before it gets to the district court level. Liberty Mutual, not pleased with the decision of the division, filed a suit for judicial review in district court in Fort Worth, asking the district court to review the division's decision. Mr. Adcock filed a motion for summary judgment at the trial court level, arguing that the division did not have jurisdiction to hear Liberty Mutual's second challenge to Mr. Adcock's eligibility for lifetime income benefits. And the division intervened, arguing that it did in fact have jurisdiction, and we're here because Mr. Adcock's motion for summary judgment was granted by the trial court. And this appeal, from the division's perspective, is all about the division's ability to resolve workers' compensation disputes. We do not take a position on the underlying question of whether Mr. Adcock's entitled to LIBS. After all, our own hearing officer made a determination that he was. But we are concerned that the position that Mr. Adcock has taken in this case not only would remove the jurisdiction of the agency to decide lifetime income benefit cases, not only when an insurance carrier argues that there's a substantial change of condition, as the insurance carrier did in this case, it would remove the ability of the parties to resolve that dispute at the administrative level.
But the effect is, every time the insurance company wants to dispute it, here we go again, forever, every year, every 6 months, every 90 days, every 30 days.
Well, Your Honor, that has not happened.
No, it hasn't happened because this issue hasn't come up before.
Well, it has come up before. It has come up before in a case where...
Okay, but let's go back to my question.
Right, right.
So your position is the insurance company can, whenever it feels like it, start this process again. And so what it's actually saying is the determination originally made of permanency is wrong.
Well, Your Honor, that's where the division and Liberty Mutual both agree that there wasn't a determination of permanent entitlement to lifetime income benefits. There was an determination as of the date of the hearing that there was. But it was permanent, it was a permanent condition based on a finding of loss of use of a body part. In this case, it was a loss of use of two legs and a right hand. But, and if the evidence holds up, Mr. Adcock would remain entitled to LIBS. But here, the insurance carrier is challenging whether that body part is in fact still lost. And the Well, Justice Stabenow, it is a final decision at the administrative level when there is a determination that there is a loss of a body part. The problem in the workers' comp area is that the human body can change. It can improve. That what was the loss of use of a body part as determined on a date in the past, that body part, in this case the legs, could be restored and be back to normal. Or at least they could be in a condition where the injured worker could return to work using those legs. That's the carrier's position. Our hearing officer found that that was not the case. But the flip side is that if we take Mr. Adcock's position and logically extend it to a injured worker who is seeking lifetime income benefits, and the agency makes a determination that he is not entitled to lifetime income benefits, that decision would be deemed final, and he wouldn't be able to come back and seek lifetime income benefits at a later date. The same principle is substantial change of condition. The injured worker might get worse, so the division can decide if he has, in fact, proved through medical evidence he's gotten worse, he can get medical, lifetime medical and lifetime income benefits. However, if the alternative is true, the agency's position is that it has jurisdiction to also determine that the injured worker is no longer entitled to lifetime income benefits if there is credible medical evidence that he has regained the use of a lost body part.
But the statute doesn't provide for that. You want to expand the language, and I don't see how the expanding the language fits with fairness, or whatever we want to call it, that says the act should be liberally construed in the worker's favor, and any reasonable doubt should be resolved in his favor. Well, how is this construing the statute, which doesn't allow you to do this by its wording? How is that construing it in the worker's favor?
Well, to answer both questions, Justice McCoy, first, liberally construed in the worker's favor, as I said, what the carrier is asserting, a right to relook and reexamine a LIBS issue, lifetime income benefits issue, would equally apply to a injured worker if they also wanted a second opportunity to revisit the LIBS question. As far as whether there is an express power, my client's position is we have an implied power based on numerous cases that give us exclusive jurisdiction to decide income benefits dispute. This is just one such dispute. Yes, Judge.
As I understand your logic, you're saying, or your authority is that commercial standard versus Brock, the 1942 Amarillo Court of Appeals that refused one American, supports your position. And, of course, the law has changed several times since that case. And when that case was decided, regardless of the language, that was a legal proceeding that would result in a final court judgment, which in those days was final. There wasn't any re-litigating or redetermining the disability like total and permanent disability that was final through the courts at whatever stage would never be changed. And you're relying on the law as you say it in 1942 or so, and that in fact wasn't the ultimate result, because in those days certainly the judgments did become final, and then that was it until then, the rest of life.
Well, Your Honor,
So I don't see how that case supports your position. And I think in light of the change in law, it's a little misleading to reach back and say that those authorities would be supportive of your position.
Well, Your Honor, the Brock case is an old case. I think it is. It was only cited to stand for the proposition that even back in the old law days, that a case was decided that it focused on the issue before the workers' comp, what was then the equivalent of the workers' comp division when a case was brought before it. That's why that case was cited. We are and are arguing that we are relying on a current interpretation of our statute and current case law that the agency has continuing jurisdiction in almost every aspect of workers' comp and including lifetime income benefits. My time is up, but perhaps Mr. Josie can also address that question as well, Judge. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, Robert Josie. I'm here on behalf of Liberty Mutual Insurance Company. May it please the court, just to kind of recap what we're talking about here. We're talking about a lifetime income benefits case. This is a class of benefits in workers' compensation that does not have a set duration. They can continue for an injured worker's life.
Well, it continues until death. That's the duration.
That is the duration if the injured worker demonstrates the entitling conditions. The problem that we're going to run into, oh, I'm sorry.
How he got a permanent right to his funds. And one hurdle I'm having to get over is if we were in a regular case and the jury makes a finding and you don't agree with it, then you have a right to appeal it. Well, here there was a determination of a permanent, total and permanent disability, and there was a right at that time to go back and challenge that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, but now we want to reopen things years later, in essence, go back and challenge what was found to be permanent and say, well, it's not permanent.
But Your Honor, that's not what we're doing in this instance. What we're doing is, back in 1997, there was a determination that, hey, there was a total loss of use of the right hand above the wrist and the right ankle, the right foot at or above the wrist, which would qualify him for lifetime income benefits.
And it was permanent.
Permanent is not part of the statute, Your Honor. The statute does not require permanent loss of use for hands.
Was it permanent?
No, Your Honor, it was not.
Okay.
This is the problem that you have with these kinds of cases. When you look at the lifetime income benefit statute, it's very bare, and it would seem to anticipate an anatomical loss of use. That would be the kind of loss of use that we would expect to be entitled to lifetime income benefits. That is the kind of case that you would not expect to revisit. This is a functional loss of use case. This is a person that was injured in 1991. His injury progressed. He received an impairment rating, which, if you look at his briefing, should have been the finality of the case. It wasn't. His condition continued to progress until many years after his impairment rating, it seemed his condition to progress to the point that he was now entitled to LIBS, that there was a loss of use at the hand and the wrist. And at that point, it was adjudicated that as of 1997, his loss of use was such that it would qualify him for LIBS under the Siebold test and under the loss of use tests. Now, 10 years later, it comes up that there is an indication that maybe the loss of use was not permanent after all. Maybe that it was not.
What do you mean after all? I thought you said it wasn't. It
was a misstatement. Maybe it was not permanent. Maybe there's not a consideration it was permanent. Maybe the loss of use no longer existed, which would qualify him for the benefits.
I seem to remember that it was total and permanent, T&P.
The wording might have been total and permanent loss of use at that time, Your Honor. I apologize. But it doesn't look like, again, that was predictive. The problem was in 2007, when we looked at the case again, 2008, Mr. Adcock was seen to be walking, was seen to be washing his car, loading groceries, smoking with both hands. Clearly, there was a utility in all of his limbs. And if the court is of the opinion that a ruling in 1997 as to a condition as of that date precludes us forever going back and looking at the condition again, that leaves instances where you have injured workers who do improve to the point that functional loss of use no longer exists. They are able to work. They are able to do everything that a normal person can get, or can do, but then there's a liability for lifetime income benefits. It's recovery that frankly shouldn't be allowed. And to parallel or to reemphasize what Mr. Hayburn said, the corollary here is the division has always allowed carriers to go back and reexamine LIV's entitlement if that was necessary, if the loss of use appeared to have faded. They have also always allowed an injured worker to go to a contested
always
case here.
Doesn't go back past when we did have workers' comp that provided total and permanent disability and a final judgment was in.
Okay. The 1991 Act, the revisions to the new old law versus new law, Your Honor?
Yes.
Okay. So let me start with the new law. The 1991, since 1991, the division has always had the position that an injured worker can go to a contested case hearing. If at that time he was not found to have the loss of use to entitle him to LIBS, he would be allowed to come back at a later date. They have always afforded the carriers this privilege, too. The concern, I think, that Justice McCoy had was that carriers would continually abuse this. This is the first case to be in a court of appeals in 20 years. However, injured workers come back regularly and routinely at the division to relitigate their cases. And also, to address your concern, if an insurance carrier felt the need to harass an injured worker and continually bring these actions time after time after time, they would be subject to sanctions by the Division of Workers' Compensation under Texas Labor Code 415.021 to the tune of $25,000 per instance per day. The sanctions are not light. And practically speaking, I've never seen an insurance carrier do that.
My point is there's no authority in the statute for you to do this or you to not to do this.
There's no express authority that would allow an insurance company or an injured worker to continually prosecute a LIBS issue, no.
Right. And I think you're saying, well, this is the way it's always been, and I'm trying to make the point of it never was that way before, I guess, the 80s.
Okay.
Are we
talking about the pre-1991 Act, the old law Act, Article 8306? To address say the 1960s, with the 50s, the 60s, with the new act, the old act, all the way up until it was changed in 1989. That act was an entirely different workers' compensation scheme. That act allowed you to settle a claim. You cannot settle a claim under current workers' compensation. To address your finality questions, there is no finality in the current workers' compensation system. There is no settlement of a claim ever. Injured workers are entitled to medical for the entirety of their lives, so long as that medical is directed at the compensable injury. That is akin to the lifetime income benefits. They are eligible for those so long as they demonstrate the entitling condition. That condition could develop over time. That condition could diminish over time. But the division should retain the jurisdiction to allow the parties, both claimant and both injured worker and insurance company, to at least examine that. That's in functional loss cases. Again, in cases where the person has lost his ankle and his feet anatomically or total loss of sight in both eyes, certainly that would not be applicable in this instance. That's pretty much our position. And again, because the orders that the division issues now are not predictive, they can't, like, say you're off work and you need you're saying you're disabled for compensable injury. This is like that. The division can look at you and say, okay, as of today, you were disabled and entitled to temporary income benefits, but we can't make an order for the future. If the insurance company wanted, that insurance company could pay up to the date of that hearing, then say, well, okay, your order goes to there, but we're not going to pay you for the rest of the weeks and force the claimant to go back through the process again. That is possible. That is allowed. It rarely happens because it's, generally speaking, a bad faith action, and you will get sanctioned as an insurance company. But the claimant is afforded the same privilege. If he's found not to be disabled on one date, he can start again and go right there. The division contains expansive authority. These cases remain open forever. Can't close them.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Joan Durkin and I represent Ricky Adcock. I've represented him through the contested case hearing, the trial court level, and now before the Second Court of Appeals. Interestingly, And I should back up and say that the court's focus on the word permanence is absolutely correct. And interestingly, in this case, Mr. Adcock lost the contested case hearing in 1997 because the contested case hearing officer said the regional sympathetic dystrophy, the RSD, that is now in your body is permanent, total and permanent as to your leg, but we don't think it's bad enough in your arm that it's not reversible. There's still some remote possibility that it's reversible. So the contested case hearing officer said, I don't think it's permanent. The appeals panel reversed and rendered and said that that the second extremity, in that case the hand, was total and permanent. So for anyone to stand before this court and say anything related to LIBS is not the TMP standard is simply a misstatement of the law, the fact, and the record. Now, the question of...
How do you address his goose and gander argument?
The worker
gets to keep coming...
Oh, certainly.
...and asking for permanency,
okay.
But the carrier doesn't get to dispute permanency later. I mean, how...
And I'll actually address that in two parts. One is... What is permanent? When you go as a claimant's counsel, when you represent a claimant before the division, as Mr. Adcock was in 1997, which I didn't represent him that go around, just since the last 4 years I'm on board. But in 1997, he lost lifetime income benefits, not because he didn't have total loss of use, but because it wasn't permanent yet. You could come back, the injured worker could come back 2 years from then, or honestly, I mean, 2 years is arbitrary. The injured worker could come back when they believe they could meet their burden of proof, and now a new inquiry would occur to look at, as of now, is your injury total and permanent? It is not a double standard. The standard is always total and permanent. And interestingly, in 2007, it became clear that the start date for LIBS was unclear. And if you went to contest a case hearing in 2005 and were found not eligible for LIBS because it wasn't yet permanent, and you came back in 2007 and were found, yes, now it's permanent, the problem was the statute didn't say when you go back to. So in 2007, the rules were clarified to say, and were clarified as to the start date. Texas Administrative Code 131.2B, which is at tab E, and I unfortunately omitted the Texas Register reference, which is 33 Texas Register 188. Is the commentary to that rule, and it's very interesting because it says that the rule change, this rule does not, this rule addresses entitlement, the start date. The rule merely addresses when they start because the law already provides that LIBS are paid until death. This rule merely addresses when they start. So there is no double standard. You keep going until it's permanent. But once it's permanent, total and permanent, then it's done. So it really isn't goose or gander. It's the same test, but as of what date? So until it becomes permanent, you can keep coming back, but it's not retroactive. It's only as of that date under the 2007 rule changes. Now, it's interesting that both counsels said, you know, if it was an amputation where it's actually a loss, we really don't think we'd be looking at it again. It's only because it's loss of use. Well, that fails because there's appeals panel cases where the carrier has come in and said he's got a prosthetic. So he hasn't really lost the leg. So, I mean,
he can walk.
So he doesn't have loss of use. He might have the anatomical loss, but he doesn't have loss of use. So it's disingenuous to say, well, we're really only asking to look at it again if there's a loss of use. The statute is clear. Loss equals loss of use. Loss of use equals loss. So the same standard applies. If you amputate your foot and you get a prosthetic, the standard is loss equals loss of use. The state and Liberty Mutual both argue that Brock is the standard you should look at. And as the court pointed out, Brock is interpreting a statute that has been repealed. But even in Brock, under the what Westlaw has as note 6, it indicates that if you're looking at the same injury and the same claimed incapacity, you may not come in and revisit it. You must have a substantial change of condition. So they're trying to adopt Brock, but then they're distancing themselves and saying, no, now we don't even want a threshold. We want unlimited ability to come in and review. And that is what they state on page 9 of their brief. Unlimited reviews of lifetime income benefits without regard to whether there's been a change of condition. Now, because we address change of condition in our brief, does that mean we agree that that's an issue? No. The local rules and the rules of appellate procedure ask that that we respond to all points raised in the brief. The argument that we have set forth in our brief and that we present to the court today is that this is a matter of statutory construction. The statute reads, for purposes of subsection A, which is the LIBS statute, the total and permanent loss of use of a body part is the loss of that body part. And 408.161 lists 7 different conditions that can qualify. Loss of both feet at or above the ankle, loss of both hands at or above the wrist, or some combination. Mr. Adcock's reflex sympathetic dystrophy that affects all 4 extremities does not result in total and permanent loss of use of all 4 extremities. It results in total and permanent loss of use of 2 or more. And it has never changed. It has never improved. The hearing officer himself said it has continued to worsen during the entire course of this injury. The statute requires that the court construe it and interpret it looking at the totality of the act. And in this case, the totality of the act sets forth what permanence is. You can look to impairment ratings. The discussion in regards to impairment ratings required that an impairment rating be assigned only for permanent conditions, and that it not be assigned until a certain fixed date in time. And it's that fixed date that seems to be the hang-up for the carrier and the state. They want the date to continue to be revisited. But the fixed date and time is what makes it permanent. For an impairment rating, that fixed date is your maximum medical improvement date. And as with LIBS, maximum medical improvement, you can go and be found not at maximum medical improvement repeatedly. You can be assigned a maximum medical improvement date and appeal it and win and be found not at MMI. And that can happen a number of times until the statutory maximum medical improvement date. The statutory maximum medical improvement date makes a presumption that 104 weeks after disability began to accrue, you are as good as you're going to get, and you're entitled to an impairment rating. Not only are you entitled to it, you are required to get it at that time. And the impairment must be based upon permanent, the permanent injury. Section 408.011, subpart 23, defines that to reasonably presumed to be permanent. So reasonably presumed at that fixed point in time. If medical science later improves and you get a prosthetic, does that mean that you no longer have an injury serious enough to qualify for LIBS? No. The legislative intent was clear. You have a fixed time and you have a standard of what is reasonably presumed to be permanent at that fixed time. The time fixed for Ricky Adcock was 1997, when a final appeals panel decision was not appealed to district court, was accepted by all parties. That is the finality, and it is not subject to revisiting. Other benefits have built-in reviews, and in their reply brief, the carrier and state have a nice little chart that talks about the different benefits. Well, for each type of benefit, there is built-in reviews and termination dates. There is no built-in review and no built-in termination date for LIBS. That wasn't an oversight. They specifically put in reviews and termination for TIBS. Under 28 TAC 129.5 and 127.1, temporary income benefits get to be reviewed. The treating doctor has to complete an off-work slip every 60 days. Temporary income benefits end at maximum medical improvement. Legislature built those in. Impairment income benefits are assigned, as I said earlier, at maximum medical improvement, and they are 3 weeks for each percentage point. The impairment rating is final after the first quarter of SIBS, because supplemental income benefits, or SIBS, you can't process a SIBS application if the impairment rating is uncertain. So you have to have finality and certainty to the impairment rating before the case can phase into supplemental income benefits. Supplemental income benefits, again, the legislature intended those to be a transitional benefit, and so they built in a review every 13 weeks under 408.143B. And every 2 years, you're subject to a designated doctor review. And they end after 401 weeks. Built-in review, built-in termination. Death benefits, subject to review regarding minority status of the children, regarding marital status of the surviving spouse, and regarding whether the child is enrolled in full-time education. LIBS, no review, no termination date. It wasn't an oversight. It was because permanent means permanent. Until death means until death. We believe that the legislative intent was clarified when the Supreme Court decided the Garcia case, which we cite on page 10 and then repeatedly thereafter, where they found that while the work comp statute might have some shortcomings, it provides for certainty and finality. It delivers due process, and therefore it satisfies the legislative intent and the constitutionality of the constitutional requirements of due process. We believe and we pray that this court find that the DWC, the Division of Workers' Compensation, lacks jurisdiction to hear this case, and that it lacks jurisdiction to hold hearings regarding ongoing LIBS eligibility once there has been a complete final hearing that the condition is permanent and the LIBS have been awarded. We ask that finding is based and supported by TWCC versus Garcia, cited on page 10, Rector versus TABC on page 2, and State versus Crank cited on page 2. Thank you.
Can you tell me about Section 12D, changing conditions?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. Section 12D of Article 8306 was from the old law. What that did was...
That did not carry over.
No, it did not. No, what that was a broad-based authority that was granted the Industrial Accident Board to review any compromise settlement agreements or anything.
So the fact that it wasn't carried over kind of says something to me.
Well, Judge, under the old system, you would settle a case, and that would be the end of the case. They wouldn't continue on. You would sign an agreement with the insurance company, with the injured worker, approved by the Industrial Accident Board, and that would end the case at that point. The injured worker would be not entitled to any additional money, no additional medical treatment, nothing. That would be it for him. That provision allowed the Industrial Accident Board to go back and review those decisions in case there had been fraud, in case there was something wrong, in case there was an improper inducement, a substantial change in condition, or any kind of problem there. That it has no applicability to the current workers' compensation system. We cannot settle a workers' compensation case. The injured worker remains entitled to medical benefits for the entirety of his life. There is no limitation. You cannot have an agreement to that effect that would do any kind of, you know, termination of that. To the same extent, that is our position regarding the lifetime income benefits. What we're hearing here is the odd position that if it's determined to be permanent in 1997, it's always permanent, whether it actually is permanent or not, whether or not the person, you know, improves. Whereas if it's not permanent in 97, you're allowed to keep going back and relitigating it, and there's no real distinction made for why there's a difference. And I think we need to be real clear here. There's two ways to get LIBS, two ways. Total and permanent loss of the body part, or total and permanent loss of use of the body part. Total and permanent loss is the anatomic loss. Answer her question, if you get an amputation at both feet above the ankle, all right, no matter if you get a prosthetic, no matter if you go back to work full time, it doesn't matter, the catastrophic loss still exists. If it's a loss of use case, then that's a total and permanent loss of use that has to be demonstrated. And that's where we run into the problems where the person does improve. If in 1997 an injured worker is bedridden, cannot walk, cannot work, cannot do anything, and then 10 years later he's out doing everything that a normal person would do, you cannot legitimately and just argue that the loss of use was permanent, because clearly it was not. We're not revisiting an old order. We are not reopening an old division order. We're not saying the early order was wrong. We're saying that as of the date of the second hearing, the 2007 hearing, he did not qualify for death income benefits. Under 408.161, death benefits are paid until the death of the employee for one of the seven conditions. And the four is the operative term here. If you don't have one of the seven conditions, you don't have the anatomic loss of use, or you don't have the functional loss of use, you do not qualify for death income benefits. Otherwise, you will wind up in situations where there are perfectly capable workers receiving benefits for the rest of their lives for conditions that simply do not exist. Or you will have injured workers who deteriorate to the point that they would qualify, but they would be barred because at the time of the hearing it wasn't permanent for the loss of use cases.
Still going back and in essence asserting that the permanency was erroneous at the original trial or hearing, and that's just something that this would be unique. I mean, you have a period of time to contest something, but you can't go back now 10 years later in a regular civil case and say it wasn't permanent, it wasn't this, it was that, it's over.
That is correct. It would be assumed at the hearings level that it would be a permanent condition based upon medical testimony or the injured worker's testimony or whatever was in front of the judge at that time. It is akin, again, to the impairment ratings that look to be permanent at the time they're rendered, but occasionally can be revised, can be completely superseded, as in this case, where the impairment rating was thought to be finalized in 1993, I believe is when it issued, but apparently wasn't, as the condition worsened over time, and then he became entitled to LIBS, which obviated the impairment rating completely. So the permanence that they anticipated in 2003 was not accurate. It does evolve over time. In a system where the injured worker is entitled to income benefits and medical benefits for the rest of his life, it doesn't make any kind of real sense or equitable principle here to strip the only regulating agency of its ability to at least look at those conditions over time. Certainly, it can continue to look at the medical benefits as the injured worker ages and as the claim continues, and it doesn't make any sense when you have a situation where there are actual income benefits that they wouldn't be allowed to periodically review those two if the qualifying condition did not seem to exist anymore and if there was actually legitimate evidence for the dispute to proceed.
One of the things that's bothering us,
Your Honor, I would respond that an insurance carrier is liable to pay income benefits week to week as and when they accrue. That's statutory duty. In this case, there is a question as to whether or not these benefits are due and have accrued. There's nothing that says that these benefits are due forever no matter what. They're only due when the entitling condition exists. We're not asking for you to do anything to revisit old decisions. We're not asking to imbue the agency with any new authority that it doesn't have. We're simply asking that you allow the agency to exert its authority to review income benefits and ensure that lifetime income benefits are included within those income benefits. It is our position, and I believe is the agency's position, that there is no legitimate distinction between the classes of benefits that would draw one class completely out of the agency's authority to review.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is submitted. Appreciate your argument. Appreciate you coming all this way to argue.
Thank you.